This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to That Peter Crouch Podcast with me, Peter Crouch. It's a very different experience today. Things have escalated since Chris told me I was a very, very careful driver. We're here at McLaren. I'm next to Ayrton Senna's car. We're about to talk to Lando Norris.
Hello and welcome to That Peter Crouch Podcast with me, Peter Crouch. I've got Chris Stark with me, very kindly here. Stephen Sidwell, Notorious.
The Notorious S-I-C-K-Y, I guess.
Another no-show.
It's a no-show from him. He did send us voice notes in the last Friday podcast, if you heard that, with his ill voice. But we know he's skiing.
Well, I've seen him skiing.
Yeah.
Pictures all over Instagram.
So it's just us two today, but it's going to be a very, very special podcast.
Well, it's very different, isn't it? We're at the McLaren Technology Centre, as it's called, which is very, very impressive, I have to say.
Yeah.
And we've got some time with Lando Norris.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a little walk round there. It's all born out of the fact that you thought I was a careful driver and we've ended up in McLaren.
Well, that's it. As always with this podcast, it starts with a discussion. There's been an escalation, and the escalation is a lot of the chat surrounding your driving style led the brilliant guys at McLaren to get in touch and say, well, let us have a look at the situation.
which they will do. And I think they'll confirm that I'm quite a casual, relaxed driver.
I think this whole, it's not even an argument, it's an interesting discussion because all of it comes from a good place. I've always said this, I think you're a fantastic driver, I'm sure. But in...
Sorry, excuse me.
Just in a very, very sort of careful, worried kind of way. I think that's how I feel because it's not erratic in a bad sense. I just imagine, because I've seen you when you, especially if I've played football with you a couple of times, you always... Because you're a pro, you're always looking around. You're looking to get that ball, move away, elbows out, that sort of thing. And I can't help but feel that the driving will be a sort of like, you know, looking around. I think what's interesting is getting Lando Norris on the pod today is amazing because obviously he's at the real sort of fast end of, you know, he's an amazing driver. And I just would like to see what he says about
that. He's an amazing driver. You can still be fast and enjoy it. By being safe.
Yeah, you can. You're right.
Neil Warnock said it so well. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, enjoy it, but enjoy it by being safe.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot to talk to him about. And we were talking on the way here as well. It's just getting into kind of the similarities, I guess, between your experience as a footballer and his experiences as one of the greatest Formula One drivers in the world right now. And, and we've got to be honest with this as well. You know, we're not... F1 super nerds here, are we? We're not coming at this from the viewpoint of understanding every technicality and beauty of Formula One.
Well, also when McLaren and Lando have got in touch with us to come down here, like it's too good. Let's be honest with it, it's too good opportunity to pass up.
Yeah,
like, it's an amazing place, and really looking forward to it.
So here's the little plan for the pod. You've never heard that before, but there is actually a plan. We're going to be speaking to Lando Norris. You're going to hear that very soon. The lovely Amy at McLaren has arranged for us to go on the Sims here, you know, the actual sort of car racing Sims.
What, me v you?
Me v you, in a kind of like who can do the fastest lap sort of thing, which will be interesting in
very
its own right, I think.
Yeah.
And then very excitingly, you're going to take Lando Norris for a little drive around here, where he'll be able to just sort of see what it's like having a drive with Peter Crouch. He'll be able to kind of report back to everyone. We're going to film the whole thing as well.
Okay, all right. Well, great day.
What a day ahead. What a podcast ahead. Hope you guys are going to enjoy it. The next thing you're going to hear is our chat with Lando Norris.
Right, Lando, thanks for joining us.
Thanks,
we're in your, what I would class as your training ground, I suppose. Like, I've had... training grounds in my career, and then we played a match on a Saturday, I'd class this as the McLaren training ground.
It is. Yeah. I think it's as good as it gets from in terms of training grounds.
Someplace.
This is my home. Eight years now. Same pitch.
Yeah.
So it's a lovely place. Welcome.
Yeah, amazing. No, thank you. So what actually happens? Like for me, obviously I could tell you like on Monday to Friday, obviously we'll work on things when we play the game Saturday.
Yeah.
For you, I suppose you're in a pre-season period now.
Yeah.
Where you're just about to launch the car.
Yep.
And so what do you do on a day-to-day basis here?
It's an exciting time because there's a lot of things going on. I've actually been in Barcelona the last 3 days doing a test, but with the old car, with 2022 car. I don't know how you would compare that to playing with a old football.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
But it just kind of gets you back in the mindset of it all and muscle memory and everything, just kind of getting back in. But MTC and McLaren, so you have like different departments of it all. You have the whole racing department, then you have the simulator downstairs, you have the whole marketing department. But day to day, like a lot of it's meetings with my engineers. So there's limited in terms of what you can do in terms of like actual driving. You know, we're not allowed to just go and test every day that we want. We can't drive the actual car we're driving this year until I'm driving it tomorrow in Silverstone. But then we have to wait until Bahrain in a few weeks. We can't just pick it up and go and have a kick around, you know, whenever we want. So it's a little bit different. But then the simulator is where we make up for it. It's virtual, but it's as close as you can get to the actual thing.
That feels insane to me, because there's obviously so much riding on the car for you with your job, obviously. But that you've almost got to wait to find out for yourself if everything's going to fit together.
Yep.
For the season ahead. Is that fair?
I mean, you get a good idea. You know, there's how many people are here. It's almost over 1,000 that are just working on the car. You know, to bring sponsorship or to design a part, make the part, whatever it is. But it's sophisticated enough that you get a pretty decent idea from simulations, from computer fluid dynamics, from their wind tunnel of what the car is going to be like to drive.
Mm.
And then you get all of that and it's put into the simulator, and then I get my feeling of, oh, it's doing this a bit more. It's improved here. Maybe it's not quite improved as much as we expect here. But in the end of the day, it is us. It's more of like we get ourselves as ready as we can, and then it's kind of how the car is on the day. And whether it's just a football thing, you know, it's how you can have an amazing day, but if everything around you is not quite working and the other players aren't doing the job that they need to do, it's hard to then turn it into a good result.
So it almost sounds a bit like you're ready, you know what you're doing, but you don't know anyone you're playing with yet.
Anyway.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah, but you know what I think about as well? Like I look at around here, there's so many people working, right?
Yeah.
And you're a young man, but like everyone is kind of geared up for you and Oscar, right?
I know,
to go out, and there's a lot of pressure, right?
Yeah.
For a young man to take.
It's something I got used to. I mean, I've been at McLaren. McLaren's the only F1 team I've been with. So I've been here for 7-8 years now. So I feel at home. I know almost everyone. I'm terrible with names, but I know almost everyone. And there is a lot of pressure because you have all the hard work. You know, they're here every single day. You know, they have very few days off. They're designing and putting all their effort into making a car that I have to then go and execute. You know, I have to go out and do that final bit of the job. But all the rest of it is them putting the car together. So you have the pressure of that, which is a lot. And when you're, like I came in when I was 18, 19, then you feel it quite a bit. Especially when you think of it, you're like, damn, everyone here designs a car and then I just have to go and drive it well enough that, you know, I try and get them points and bring them trophies and all of these things. So there's definitely the pressure of it, but that comes with experience and time of dealing with it better. But then you also have the fact it's a company. I work for them. It's a job. I don't want to lose my job. You have partners. You have the execs. You have all of these important people that you also want to do a good job in front of. So there's a lot of pressure. But the same, I think, with every sport. You know, you have your teammates you want to impress, and you have your team. You have your own family you want to do a good job for. So there's all of those aspects of it. But I think they relate very well to.
But it is an unusual sport in that sense. Yeah, I get what Pete's saying in that you have almost a team sport in the way that it's a team feeling. You feel it when you're in this building, actually. Everyone's part of a team, but then they're sending you out.
it's
both a team sport and an individual sport in that sense. There's not really one like it, I don't
think. Well, I'm thinking to equate it to, like, it's like when I was at Liverpool, right? We all work together, or Tottenham. We'll all work together and then we'll just send Gareth Bale out on a Saturday. Or we'll send Stephen Gerrard. Go on, mate. Go and win us the game.
Yeah.
Which is quite often what we did, to be honest. But
you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. You all train together in the week and then two of you are sent out. 2v2. That's what the
football... Crack on.
I'd love to see that in football, just as an experiment. Which two people would go out from every club?
Yeah. We're all there to support him beyond.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's a cool responsibility, because then you're also the guy that is, you know... You're the one that's put up there. So if you do deliver, then you're also, you know, you're like, you've delivered for the whole team. So then the reward that comes from all of this pressure is incredible at the same time. Like that reward, you know, the pressure turns into something precious. And that is a trophy. That's standing up on the podium and seeing the whole team. And
that is good,
the feeling is just as good and compensates from that pressure.
But I've talked about on this podcast before where, you know, say I'm playing for England, right? And there's players in front of me, you know, and I call them teammates, but, you know, I still want to be the main man, right? Uh-huh. So there's none more so. You must have answered this 100 times, this question. It's a difficult one to kind of navigate, but of course you're still competitive and you want to, even though you're teammates, you still want to be the best, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a subject that no one like ever likes talking about.
Yeah, of course.
And it's always like, and it confuses a lot of people, like your teammates, but what, you want to beat each other? Mm. And... so it does get like complicated, but at the same time, some of the best stories that come from teammates battling it out for the actual championship, you know,
it's great to watch.
Lewis and Rosberg and all these things. And that makes it exciting at the same time, but also it tense as hell. Mm. And I've not been in that position yet. Hopefully this year or next year, whatever, in the future, it can be Oscar and I, and we're up the top and we're fighting. And I'm sure that changes the atmosphere quite a bit, because as much as Formula One is a team sport, and it is, because you're working with everyone that's here, you know, thousands of people, you're working with your teammate. You know, we work a lot over the last few years to try and create a better car, bring the guys good feedback. And when Oscar's comments and my comments align, then it always makes everyone's job a bit easier. Mm. So you work together from that side, and even on track, sometimes you help each other out. But at the end of the day, it's your career, you know? So you have to, there's a bit of it where you have to be selfish, because it's kind of like, if he beats you enough, you lose your job, and vice versa. And it's just as cruel as it is nice, you know, at the same time. So just as well as it's going like amazingly, you're 2-3 bad years, you're out, you could be out of a seat. Mm. And before you know it, your career has gone from this to like, well, what do I do now? Do I sit on the sidelines? Do I find racing another category? Because it's 20 spots in the world, you know, football, you lose your spot in one team. There's a lot of other teams you can go and like, okay, I can find another club, or I'll move to another country.
Is it not like that then?
Formula One's 20.
We've got 20. They've got 20
spots in the world.
In the world. That is when you actually all that down, that is incredible. Like, and do you ever take stock of that? Like, do you ever go, there's 20 lads, you know, I thought when I got in the England squad and they gave you the number 9 shirt, I thought, you know, all the people that play football, and it wasn't lost of me. I was like, today it's me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's like, a crazy thought.
Yeah. So do you ever think there's 20 spots in the world, you think
I'm one?
Done all right.
Yeah. Because I mean, I think of when I was a kid dreaming of doing that. But I'm like watching, I was watching Lewis and Fernando when they were both here at McLaren. And that was like a good rivalry.
There's so many funny photos of you really young. They always wheel out these pictures of you really like young, asking for photos.
I was the opposite of you. I was like 2 foot, freaking tiny.
Amazing.
But I think of that like, I was that kid dreaming of being there, thinking, and I've never been the biggest, most confident guy, like in self-belief. I've never been like, I'm going to make it. You know, I've never been that guy that goes to everyone, you know, I'm going to be an F1 one day. Mm-hmm. It's just not how I've been, and it's not how I am. But then you're there, you know, all of a sudden you're like, wow, it's so far out. And then all of a sudden you're in Formula One, and you're like, I'm part of McLaren. I'm part of this team that had Senna and Prost and Hakkinen and Hamilton and all of these drivers. Now I'm in that spot. I'm racing against Hamilton. I'm racing against Fernando and Seb and all of these guys. And you're like, this is pretty incredible. So there are those moments. It's not like I think about it all the time.
Yeah, of course.
But it's...
You've got to allow it.
You have to think of it, I think, sometimes to give yourself that perspective of I'm one of 20 in the whole entire world that has this job. I get to race cars and do what I love to do. And I know I'm lucky to be in this position. I have been my whole life. So I definitely don't take it for granted.
Can I just touch on how you kind of get to this position, you know, because it's something that obviously I can't comprehend, because I, you know, I could see the football path. I know how you do that, but with obviously motor racing or motorsports, I don't know how.
Yeah, it's a bit different. So you started with karting. Most people would start with karting. I think nowadays people are so good at maximizing every step of the way. If you almost don't start at the beginning, it's hard to make up for lost time. So you have a lot of kids now who are starting at 3, 4, 5 years old. You know, the dad puts them in a go-kart and it becomes more natural and they grow up doing it. And I started when I was 6, 7. My dad had no idea. He says he did, but he has no idea about racing. And so I kind of just did it because it looked cool. I wanted to have a go. And you do karting for, I did it between the ages of 8 to 12, 13. And then I went into car racing. But you have the different steps through karting. You know, you have juniors and seniors and different age categories. And I was always tiny. Like I was tiny, very skinny, very light. So I found it always quite hard in karting because I'm going against like normal sized people.
But why would that not would that not be to your advantage that you were?
At times it's probably to my advantage, at times not. Like certain conditions it can actually help, certain conditions it can
I'm just thinking of Yoshi going up against Bowser.
Exactly. How are you going to win in like a head-to-head? That was me. So
true, there's benefits to both.
There's benefits to both. Sometimes you can sneak through and you're the little guy and it's mint. But so you go through these categories and kind of everyone does that. The thing with racing also is it's you have to kind of pay your way all the way. It's hard to get sponsorships. It's hard to just get free drives. You know, it's a very, very expensive sport. It's not like football where you can just go buy one for whatever, 20 quid and go have a kick around in your garden or something. You know, it's not like that. So there's less people getting into motorsport than football and a lot of other sports. But you have to make your way up and then you get into car racing. It's even more expensive. And you kind of have, it's been simplified now, but you kind of have Formula 4, Formula 3, Formula 2, Formula 1. And every step of the way, the cars get bigger, faster, quicker. Simple as that. You work with more people. There's more data. There's more analysis you have to go into. There's more technology. And then Formula 1 is like 3 steps in one go from F2 to F1 in terms of the stage you're on. You know, you go from F2, which is up there. You're on TV. You're working with people. You might be with a team like McLaren as a junior driver, but then you go into the world of Formula One and the actual out of the car is probably what takes the biggest step forward and biggest jump for everyone to get used to is being in front of a camera, you know, every minute of the day. And you say one wrong thing, it's like, it's
so
tough.
Do they teach you that? Do you have to do, you'd have media training and all
you know
this
what, like I think with football, like it does feel like kind of almost more controlled. Like obviously, you know, I'm quite a novice at Formula One, but I when I watch it, you know, they just put a camera in your face at any point.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You're getting in your car, getting ready.
I know,
if I'm in the dressing room, I know that I've got my time to focus, relax. Yeah. You know, but look, whenever you walk around that pit lane, do you know what I mean? Tom Cruise is there and,
yeah,
you
well.
Know, this Brundle with a camera.
Yeah. Do you find Gordon Ramsay's always bothering you? He always seems to be floating about.
He goes to quite a few of the races, but I know Gordon quite well, so it's always nice to see him.
It feels like
it's definitely the cameras and TV definitely have more access, I think, to us as drivers than most other sports.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of because that's how the business of it all works. You know, you need the sponsorships, you need the advertising. Ooh. It has to be on TV. And I think the sports and the business is kind of set up that way. That's how it has to run.
Because it's a great thing for the viewer.
Oh, the pit will know. The funniest thing to watch, aren't they? Yeah.
The interviews,
the way
two
he
minutes
goes
before he like, you know, you don't really get that in any other sport. You know, just as you're literally about to run onto the pitch, someone doesn't go, "How are you feeling,
what do you
mate?"
Think?
So sometimes I wish, and I think every driver wishes, you had a little bit more time because Sundays go through very quickly. You do your preparation, then you do like the driver's parade. We go around in the cars on the track, wave, and see all the fans, which is always a nice thing. But then you run back, you have to get changed, then you go straight on track again. So things go very quickly. And it's kind of like TV or driving. That's kind of how it feels like most of the day. But you get used to that. And I guess a bit you always look forward to then.
What looks terrifying in that position is, you know, in those races where you're boiling hot, it's hot weather, how they cool you down in those moments before. And it looks to me that they haven't quite figured out the science of how to do this. Like, they're just lobbing water at you, aren't they? And
I mean, you have like all the ice packs and things. You want to keep your like the vital, you know, you have like a just a cool towel, something so simple, it still works well. You have the ice packs, there's these certain sprays you can use to make you feel a bit cooler. But honestly, by the time you step in the car, you're already so hot. You're just, because you got your fireproofs on and then it's like 3-4 layers of fireproof. So then you're already sweating by the time you just put your suit on, then you put your helmet on, then you have like no breeze and you sit in the car. So it is nasty, but it's just part of the sport. It's part of the job, you know. It's not just driving a car. There's a lot of other things along the way, mentally, physically, which are part of it. But I think it makes it cooler. I think it makes it more challenging. Mm-hmm. But there are nasty races. Like Qatar last year was by far the hardest race I've done in my life. Hot, humid. The drinks bottle you have behind your seat, you have like 1 liter, maybe 1.5 liters. Within 5 laps, it's like boiling water. So you have a sip and it's disgusting.
Wow.
So there's some things you can do, but there's not a lot. And the rest of it is you making sure you train enough and you train in heat chambers and with your thermals and jackets on to try and prepare yourself for these situations.
Yeah, and so that, I'm just thinking about obviously the day on the, when it comes to the Sunday, you know, what would your kind of routine be? Like when you wake up,
yeah,
you're in a hotel, like even adjusting to the time zones, like you're time flying all tough. Over. Is that tough, yeah?
There's certain places which are bad, especially when you have some back-to-backs. So one weekend straight into another and you literally go from one side of the world to the other. Ooh. The time zones can be pretty rough. So within 1 week to go from being perfectly on one time zone to being perfectly ready for the next is not easy. Mm. And not just for us, but for everyone on the team. Drivers are normally the ones which have it probably a little bit easier because we don't have to turn up to the tracks until a Thursday. Mm. But for the mechanics, the engineers, they're already there like Tuesday, Wednesday. And then it is tough. That's, again, one of the challenges. But everyone's got then the sports scientists and your coaches and physicians, whoever it is, to help you with this and to get onto it quicker, and you're doing training at the right times, you're sleeping at the right times. There's, again, like with every sport, a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that you don't see on TV and stuff like that, that come together to make you perform at the highest level you need to perform at. Mm.
It's great we're talking to you today. It's kind of come from an escalation on this podcast in that we've been discussing Pete's driving style lately. Uh-huh. And there's nothing technically bad about it, right? And I'm sure you've been told about this, but he's just a very careful driver.
This has been born out of something that is, he's never seen me drive.
No.
Right?
Okay.
So he's, no, it's just my perception.
His perception of me, right, is that I'm a very careful driver.
I think there's something very weird about seeing a celebrity drive in a car. Uh-huh. And there's something weirder about a sports person, because I think you think footballers are going to be great drivers, but actually there's no real reason why that should be the case.
Yeah.
And actually, what I imagine Pete in a car is sort of like, you know, as if he's waiting on a corner or something, his head's doing that, like, and it's all like...
So this, it was born out of, right, so he now thinks I put my seatbelt on before I start the engine, right? Yeah. And that's gained a lot of traction, which is what you should probably do.
Yeah, it's technically right.
But you see, and then he thinks I check all my mirrors before I indicate.
Which
and
again
then,
is and technically right.
Again, it's technically right.
Yeah. But you seem affronted by that because... Well, I think you like to think that you're driving like landed, like it's cool, it all fits, that sort of thing. And it's really not the case, well, I don't think.
Would you say that? Would you look at me and think I was a careful driver? It's probably not the question you thought you were going to have today.
I mean, potentially.
Yeah, really? Yeah. Really? Oh, yeah. Okay.
There's just a slight,
I don't know.
I'm not nervy vibe around you and cars. Mm. There's just something a bit... don't know, not quite in control of it, you know?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
I mean, you're a lovely guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And therefore, I think it sometimes gives the perception of you're like... Oh,
passive,
yeah,
on the road.
Passive, yes.
Corner.
Really?
Yeah. You'll always give way. There's always, you know, plenty of time to indicate.
He would stop in the middle just to come on, you first.
God, after
middle
you.
Of a T-junction.
He's like that constantly, just thanking everyone. No, yeah. What's your experiences of being out and about driving and people?
I hate it.
People like, when you're clocking the road, there next
right?
to you.
I'm more scared on the road than I am in a race car.
You know when you're at the lights,
stop
right?
It. Say you by mile.
If you pull up at the lights, like someone clocks you, if I'm in my Ford Fiesta, I'm taking you on no matter what.
Okay.
Like I think
Is that it, what car you got?
It won't win.
You must, I haven't got a Ford Fiesta, but I'm just saying, you know, if someone pulls up next to you, it's their chance, right, to take you on.
Yeah.
Have you had that before?
Yeah.
Have you?
Uh-huh.
So someone's pulled up at lights gone, Lando Norris, I'm doing him.
Yeah. I actually had it. We were filming something and I was taking a kid to school and I had to go and pick him up from his house in the morning and in a McLaren. And so he's sitting beside me, you know, cameras everywhere, so driving nicely and speed limit, and like I always do.
Of course.
And there's traffic lights and I'm in my race suit, which I freaking, in public,
always.
My race suit, I hate. And I'm sitting there and someone clocks me on the side. But I'm like, I got a kid here on TV. I'm like, okay. And then you put down the window and they say hello. And you can tell he's like,
ready to go.
He's sinking it, isn't he? He's sinking it. But I couldn't, because I was like, I have to act, I have to know I'm a nice guy. But you have those moments, but you know, you got to let them have their little bit of, I beat him off the line today.
Yeah.
You know, just let him feel good.
It's the guy. It's the guy in the Subaru, isn't it? I've had it myself.
Always, you know,
the guy in the Subaru, the Evolution or whatever. He pulls over and he's fully boy racing up, and you're like, he wants it. And you're like, you.
Yeah.
But I mean, the idea that someone looks to their left and Lando Norris is there, but in the suit as well, really makes me smile.
Born to race. It's ready to go.
You look like this everywhere you go.
I know. Because if I was wearing papaya out and about, a lot of people would want to race, and I don't think it would end very well.
Yeah. What about, you're a competitive guy. How else does it bleed into the rest of your life? So, for example, if you're ever in the supermarket, are you finding yourself taking the corners quite tight?
100%.
With the trolley?
Like, you know, you have to set up the trolley for the corner.
Go out,
get the drift. You have to get like the drift going
fish
before
counter.
The corner. So
the fish counter.
Stay away from the fish counter.
Yeah.
I'm not a fish guy, so I have to stay away from that. But I'm definitely I don't just push the trolley.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Scandinavian flick to get the apex and then drift and then, you know, hit someone.
you just got to get... Yeah, I don't ever think I get the lines quite right in the supermarket.
Miss the whole corner and go straight on.
Yeah.
But I am competitive. I'm in everything I do. I mean, I have two sisters and a brother. So especially with my brother, I think you just grow up being competitive with your brothers.
Mm.
And definitely, because we raced together and we kind of grew up together with racing, you know, playing games and playing Gran Turismo or F1, whatever it was, you always have that competition. So I think that started very early. But everything I do, and in golf as well, you have to be competitive in that. Otherwise, it's not.
You always
fun.
Have it with walking, don't you?
I do. Yeah. Like we said, the driving thing. Like we mentioned on the podcast. Like if you see me, and like you walk past me, then I'm gonna it's on. Yeah, I know it's on. So like loads of people who listen to it walk past me really quickly, and then I have to. We have a walking race.
No, you naturally find yourself in a sort of walking race with people. Yeah. It's like you're never quite sure.
Normally, when you get off the plane.
Right.
That's it.
You know, to the baggage. Like you always get those people are like, why is this guy so keen?
Because
then he has to just wait for his bag for 10 minutes anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm that guy, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Or that when you go down the escalator, but someone tries to outwalk you off the escalator.
They're never going to win. But also, what pisses me off in that situation with that escalator is it's worse when, you know, they're not fast enough that you should stop walking. It's the people who stop. And I think, like,
why have you done that?
No, you're going to be here. You know where you end up behind them forever.
Yeah.
And they're stopping on not the one that goes up, the one that goes.
Just the flat one.
They're pointless now.
Bastards.
Yeah.
There's only one way to do them is where you you moonwalk down them. You turn around and just do
Is
the
that
thing.
What you do, is it?
No, that's what I do, Lando. Don't judge me, mate.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So yeah, I was going to ask you about like the race days, right? So come a Sunday, what would your kind of, do you have a meal you would eat?
Or,
like,
yes.
Do you have superstitions? Because I think, you know, when you're getting into a car, like you're putting yourself at risk. And is there things that you do? Because I was so superstitious about football, but you know, I'm not
really,
it's not as dangerous as what you're doing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely things I have to do. So, like I always have the same meal. I mean, there's two meals I might change up, but breakfast, poached eggs or scrambled eggs on toast with some avocado. Like, I think I've had that every day.
You're poached and scrambled, do you?
Or
together?
Poached or.
I've never even heard of this.
I watch my weight at the same time.
Yeah. Wow.
But that is my Sunday meal. And Saturday and Friday, Thursday. But that is, I have to have it on Sunday. I can't have anything else, otherwise I'm just, I don't know, I just don't feel right. Mm. Same with the lunch. Like lunch, you don't have a lot of time. By that point, I'm also very nervous. The rest of it's pretty much just, you have to go and do this and you go and do that. And there's not a lot of room to do other things. But then I have to have my, you know, 5-10 minutes you get alone when you're getting changed, music on, and I normally like full volume. I don't care. It annoys everyone upstairs. Mm-hmm. Oscar can hear it through the next door. But full volume, like I'm just in, and I don't care what music, like sometimes it's the most chilled music and everyone's like, is everything all right? Everything's great.
How do you decide it? Just on the
My
day?
Music?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, sometimes it's a bit of Lewis Capaldi. Sometimes it's a bit more hardcore, you know, techno. Sometimes Beethoven, you know, whatever the vibe is, I'll just chill to that. But it's just whatever makes me feel good. So it's not what gets me pumped up. It's whatever makes me kind of just feel the best.
But don't want you being relaxed. Upset before a race. You know, I love Lewis. He's a dear friend. But the idea that you're playing, I just want someone to love, like before a race.
Everyone's just like you, moonwalk, mate.
Yeah.
We've all got our quirks, haven't we?
I have a little cry before I get in the car.
Why not, eh?
But like, if you have a really good race that day, would you put the same tune on? Not like that. You wouldn't, you're not superstitious.
Yes, no, I think I would. Yeah. Like if, yeah.
That's what I would do.
Yeah, I do until it didn't work today.
Yeah, that's what next I mean. Song. Exactly, yeah.
But I think I do. But I think that's kind of how my food worked. Like one, I have to just find something I like and it's easy to just have on a race day with the pressure and the nerves because sometimes I just don't even like to eat. Like my lunch might be a little wrap like this big and that's my lunch before a race, you know.
Mm. I read somewhere chicken and pineapple. Is that right?
Chicken, rice, pineapple, a bit of teriyaki sauce.
Nice.
Like that is, it's freaking mint.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a little wrap. But that's my lunch. So I have that. I'm listening to my music. I'm vibing. Like that's my little time to just chill. And then always get in from the left side of the car. I don't think I've ever
got in
from the right.
Okay.
It's not like I've always had to, but it's just become a thing.
Habit.
And now I would feel odd if I get in from the wrong side. And then I always now give my mechanics a little fist bump before I get in the car.
Are you listening to music at that point?
In the car.
Because you have headphones
in. No, I've never. I've not tried. I might try it this year. Because sometimes I think I'm too approachable.
Yeah.
I find it hard to say no to people. So when someone comes up like, you got 2 minutes. I can't. I find it hard to just go, nah, sorry. Mm. But other drivers, you know, it's just like a hand up, look the other way. Mm. But just headphones, because it just makes you have a bit more time to yourself and you can keep your mind away and do things. But I also like the fact I can go from having a chat to whoever it is on the grid and, you know, with one of my friends or whoever. Mm. And I literally go from, you know, like what we're doing next week. And it just, my mind is completely away from Formula One, but I'm on the grid. Mm. And I almost like it because then I can all of a sudden, I'm like, helmet on, you know, balaclava, helmet on, earpieces, it goes quiet. Then it's me. Then it's just, I'm on my own. Then I can think about the things I need to. So I'm a big overthinker and I overthink way too many things. So it's actually good sometimes to just get distracted by other things.
Mm. So okay, well, let us help you out on that front. So maybe two songs that we can recommend as a podcast for you to try, and if it works, let us know.
Okay.
Vanessa Carlton, 1,000 miles.
Oh, 100. Yeah. That's a regular, that
just
one.
A staple. Just a staple.
You know, big podcast song, that. Yeah. Chumbawamba, Tub Thumping, you know that. I get knocked down, but I get up again.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's a good one.
Give them both a go, and if either of them
Vanessa,
do the business.
Like, I know Vanessa very well.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
In terms
then.
Of music.
Yeah. That's a
regular one.
Yeah. Well, if you need, we can get Patrick Bamford to perform it for you. Yeah. He's very good on the piano.
Yeah. It could be, yeah. I could try it. And if it works, might have to be my regular.
Well, that'd be great.
Great.
I'll let you know.
Yeah, let us know.
I might have the worst race of my career. Guys, no, you really screwed me over.
In which case, don't let us know.
Don't let us know.
I find this whole setup. So then when you're in that moment, when you've got, so you've got your helmet on, what is that first voice you'll hear? Like, and are there a lot of, is it as calm as it seems and ordered, or is there like panic in your ear? How does it actually work?
In my ears, it's calm because only one person can normally speak to me. When it's on the grid, then it's two. It's my race engineer, Will, and my performance engineer who's back in the garage, and they're looking at if the wind's changing, if the weather's changing. They let me know what tires everyone chooses to start on. So I think it's 3 or 5 minutes before he gives me the update of, the people that I can't see, they're starting on soft tires, hard tires. So you kind of get that first indication of what strategy people might be going for. But then it's fairly quiet. You know, my engineers, because they're talking to all the mechanics, there's quite a strict set of guidelines. You know, mechanics aren't allowed to be on the grid 30 or 10 seconds before we go. The fans have to be taken out of the car at a certain time. Tires have to be on at a certain time. So there's quite a bit of rules for them. So normally they're distracted. And it's just me playing over in my mind how I want turn one to go. You know, I got my start to nail. You have to hit the clutch in the perfect position. You know, it's no foot clutch. So it's all done on the hand. So you're kind of practicing a bit on your hand. And they want you to hit an exact number. If I don't hit an exact number, and it's quite a big movement of clutch, and they're like, we want you to hit this number. And you have to hit it to the one. If I'm one above, they're like, you know, you could have got a bit more out of that. If you're one under, you're like, and you maybe get a bit of wheel spin, you know, it's like, should have been here. So very precise with what you have to do. So there's a lot of practice and trying to get that perfect. And the starts are almost the easiest time to win or lose positions.
Yeah.
So it's the thing you almost want to put the most effort into to nail.
But the manner with which they talk to you, because we obviously hear little sound bites, you know, and they put some of the radio through onto the TV. I've never fully understood how it works. As Crouchy says, we're slight novices on this, in that there's only certain ones that get broadcast, right, or access to broadcast. So you always know when you're saying these things, those are the ones that they're happy to put out, right? I'd love to hear the others. but I always find it very funny, the way that they communicate with the drivers is always so calm. Like, all hell could be breaking loose. But the manner with which they talk to you is...
Yeah, it needs to be, though, because they want you to stay calm when sometimes there is absolute panic going on behind the scenes. Like, we don't hear it, but after when we review things, we listen to, like, everyone. Because I want to sometimes be in the shoes of what my engineer is listening to. And if you could put their headset on before, like, a pit stop or something, or when rain's coming in, you'd be surprised at how much just... This guy's saying this thing and they got it at one volume. This guy's saying another thing and you got another volume. And you got this guy talking to you on another radio channel. And then I'm talking. And they're trying to, like, four or five different, like, they're trying to simplify it. And there's always a room for improvement with these things. But it's sometimes it's chaos.
Yeah.
And they're trying to think of so many things. And you're thinking, what if he does this? What happens if someone else does that? If we box now, what do they do? So there's always people trying to think of things and come up with ideas and so forth. But then... And it's panic. Like, sometimes I'm like, I can't understand how you guys listen to this. And then, okay, Lando, we'll be boxing this lap. And then I'm like, might be panicking. I'm like, yeah, sure. And then I'll box. But you want them, like, and you work together. I work together a lot with my engineer to try and, I want him to say certain things in certain ways. Yeah. Like, I worked with Will now, my engineer, for the last 6 years. I know when he's like, when he means something or when he's trying to hide something. I get a sense of, something's happened. Or I can feel he's stressed or when he's not stressed. So then at the same time, I can be helpful to him. Mm. If he coughs, he's stressed. Like, he has a stress cough. So sometimes he might say something and then cough and I'd be like, oh, okay. All good, William.
So I
would then try and give something a little bit back. So it always works like that. And it works with everyone. Everyone's trying to help one another and keep each other calm and under control because you have to make important decisions. But you have the stress. Some are very stressful because sometimes they're very late. They're crucial decisions. But the F1 app, you can listen to all the radio. So it's unfiltered. swear words, the lot.
That's amazing.
Imagine Neil Warnock.
I feel that's the way football's going to go. You know, like it feels like it needs to catch up with the kind of access that F1 is giving. I think it will, but at the moment it's still so guarded.
It's still just, you see a football game.
It's kind of it.
It's kind of it.
Yeah, you know, like, but I think the access, like, eventually it will be kind of in the change room. On, you know,
yeah.
But I think would you like a manager in your, if all players, right? And you had,
no, I wouldn't would
you
like it, no.
But firstly, they would not talk the way that Lando is talked to. Definitely in that
not.
Calm.
Well, that's why it hasn't happened.
Yeah, imagine maybe Dicey or a Warnock in your ear.
Well, they tried it with Warnock, and we still got the clips.
Oh, yeah,
happening now. You know, you talking about, you have to hit that specific number and the amount of pressure on the start and things like that. Like, you talked about nerves as well. Like, I remember when I played, actually now I'm out of it, I've kind of forgot about the nervous energy that I had, but I used to hate it. Like, I have to be this kind of jokey, kind of jovial person to just so I forgot actually kind of doing.
Yeah.
And that was just my way of handling it. Everyone else handled it different ways. Like, two questions really is, like, how do you cope with that? And also, do you have because the best thing I found about being in sport was overcoming that fear, overcoming that nerves, and then getting a good result, and the buzz from that is unrivaled, insane, right? Yeah. And then, you know, the way I'd celebrate, I'd have to probably have a few drinks. Like, would you let yourself go after a game? Yeah. And how do you get over the nerves?
So nerves, I think, like, 50-50. 50% of it is just time, and you're in it, you kind of just deal with it better. The other part is just learning what should affect you and what shouldn't affect you. Mm. You know, the fact that there are so many people, I feel like, is always going to affect me a little bit, because I'm like, I want to perform for everyone and I don't want to let them down. The same time, that's my motivation. Like, every time, whether it's the off season, whatever, you know, the fact that 1,000 people are trying to make a car quick for me, I don't want to let them down. I don't want to make a stupid mistake or miss out on an opportunity when an opportunity arises because I'm not prepared enough or whatever. So I use the not wanting to let people down, the pressure, as also the motivation. But also, like, trying to turn it into some excitement. Like, you always want to get excited. I don't like getting too excited for a race. I never get too pumped up. That's just not my way of doing things. But trying to turn those nerves, which I do hate, because they just make me feel bad. And I just, like I said, I overthink. So as soon as I'm nervous, I overthink. I'm like, what happens if I think of the negative things too, you know? I think, like, what happens if I mess up the start?
What happens?
What am I going to do then? And, like, my starts haven't been good recently. What do I do now? Like, what happens if I miss it again? Or what happens if I make a mistake into turn one? So I still think of those things, but they're the things you don't want to think of. So then I try and take my mind away, which is when I'm outside just talking to my friends. And you might see me like, isn't he in the car in like 2 minutes? But I do that to take my mind away almost more than anything, or listen to music or something like that. So you come up with your own little things, whether it's talking or music.
A lot of people will relate to that.
That
fear of almost overthinking things and ways of managing that.
Yeah, but I think of good and bad. You know, people like, don't think of the bad things, but I can't stop myself. You know, I'm dealing with it better now, but I'll think of the good. You know, I think of, like, okay, so this is what I want to do. Then I'm going to do that. I'm going to get through there. And then my mind will always just go like, but then I'm going to lock up and go wide, aren't I?
Oh,
and I'm like, fuck, why have I thought of those things?
It's that pressure. Like, I've told a story on this podcast before, right, where that the nervous energy is kind of like so much, but like overcoming it is just the best thing in the world.
Yep.
But I don't miss that kind of before, because I told the story before where I'm on a bus going to one of my first England games, and we're going to Old Trafford, and I'm sitting there, and, you know, obviously my team was loads of big hitters on it, you know, Beckham, Lampard, Gerrard, you know, Rooney, all on this bus. And I'm sitting there with them all on the bus, and I look down, we're in a bit of traffic, and there's a fella in a pub with the newspaper, and I look at him and I go, God, I'd love to be him right now. Do you know what I mean? I'm thinking, I'm so nervous about this.
Oblivious to it all.
And I'm thinking, he's not got a care in the world, that fella. But obviously, I know that's ridiculous, and I'm in such a fortunate position. But for one split second, I'm like, he's sitting there with his point.
No, I
you know, I know, like, do you ever have where you think, you're sitting in the car and you go, God, what have I done to myself? Like, your first F1 match.
Yeah.
Why have I done this to myself?
It's tough because so many things go through your head. But there is those moments where you just think, I wish I could just like watch everything happen and not like be there in it. You know, I wish I could just watch this race, watch myself do the race, but not have to be in that mind of like my mind just blowing up with things.
But it's the best feeling in the world when you overcome
that. But it is.
That,
like when that turns into the excitement and then you're in, you know, like the match, like maybe a match has a bit more of a build up. For the race, it's straight in and almost the most pressure is the first lap, the first corner. And so you go from, you know, just warming up the tires a bit and red lights go out and it's everything. It's no like small little build up to it. So very quickly it goes from, damn, I'm thinking of this. And then the red lights are out and you forget all of it. And then it's just, you're in your zone and you're focused on doing what you got to do. But you have those thoughts of just like, I wish I could be in the grandstand right now. You see some guy having like a drink or a burger and you're like, I wish I could.
And I guess you've got to have that perspective as well, is this is a point in your life where you get to do these things and you'll look back on and be so proud and
absolutely.
And well, then the next,
So when it does go well, right? So then afterwards, what do you do? Because the adrenaline's pumping, right? You can't, I found it so hard for me to decompress, especially after an evening game. I played in the Champions League. We've done well. You know, it's 10:30 at night. I'm not going to sleep. How do you? What?
Straight to the gym.
Straight to the gym.
No. I like to spend a bit of time with the team. It's like, you know, I love being part of the team. So I very much enjoy trying to spend it with them because I feel like they're just as much part of it as me being the one to go out and execute, like we spoke about. I'm still very much like they gave me the pit stop, in world record pit stop, whatever it is, like they were part of it. But you have to go out and sometimes you have to just de-stress, let go of it all. And a lot of that time, that is just going out with some friends and trying to forget that you're a driver, forget you have some responsibilities and all of these things and you just want to go out and have a good time.
Bit of karaoke?
Every now and then.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, I'm not saying there is.
Enjoy it.
I'm saying I rate karaoke.
What? Only because I know this was a passion of yours and I've been sort of following it from a bit of a distance. We spoke about it on something else before and you were saying you were getting into DJing and I've sort of became weirdly proud of you and then was sort of watching any progress that I would see float up here at ours. So you were Martin Garrix at one point and da-da-da.
Yeah.
Are we still pursuing the ambition?
Nope.
No.
Retired.
Shocking news. Is that official?
It's I think it might be now.
What's yellow bars coming up?
It's on breaking news.
Breaking news.
Lando Norris is retired.
DJ career is over. Retired. Didn't even know it started.
What happened?
Retired.
Why aren't we going along with that?
Just priorities of life.
No.
I got races to win and championships to try win.
At one point, I saw pictures of Dex on private jets and things like that. He's putting in the training.
I got heavily addicted to DJing.
Yeah.
And I will not blame Mr. Garrix for this, who I'm dear close friends with, but he did get me my first set of Dex and I would travel by a plane, whatever it was, in cars, with my decks, with speakers, and hotel rooms, wherever it was, and I brought my decks with me. And they're like, they're the big decks,
yeah,
you know, like it's like
yeah,
that. But then I got the speaker, like decent set of speakers with me. I'd have it in the car, like no passengers were coming with me. My decks in my passenger seat. But I loved it. I love music. But I really, really loved it. And I got to the point where I was doing so much. And I DJed a couple clubs and things like that. But it wasn't right. It wasn't the correct thing for me to do and was not distracting me. I wouldn't say it was distracting me, but it was just taking my mind too much away from what I got to do, which is my job.
Well, I hope you will revisit that.
I'll come back to it one day.
Come back stronger one day.
I loved it and I love that world. It's just, I got like a daytime job and this is a nighttime job. Yeah. So when you try and do both,
you're right.
Zero sleep is in the schedule.
But it makes
right.
You know what I mean? It's like Monaco, Vegas.
You know, but Miami, I got offered to DJ New Year last year in Dubai. I got offered a bit of money and it was like decent. It was hard to say no, but then I got nervous and I was like,
I think you need a big gig. I mean, obviously, we do
We do Crouch Fest.
We do Crouch Fest.
If you want to come along to Crouch Fest, it was Wembley Arena this year.
Yeah.
You're more than welcome. We had Rudimental actually this year. So,
good guys.
If you're up for it next year,
You give me headline. A few years.
All right.
Yeah.
Give me a few. Like, let me win a couple championships. Yeah, and
yeah. I'm getting the impression he doesn't want the distraction of being a DJ. This is what it's coming across. Yeah. So although he's announced retirement, it'll be even bigger PR when he unretires.
Exactly.
That's what all you sports people do.
It's all just a story.
You say you retire and then you're back before you know it anyway. Yeah,
well, I'm thinking around doing this podcast. Yeah. Lando, absolute pleasure, mate. Good luck for the season.
Pleasure.
Great to talk to you, mate.
Cheers, dude. Top pleasure. Man. Thank you.
Head over to our YouTube channel and subscribe to see me driving with Lando Norris around McLaren. Well, what a day we've had. Lando Norris, what a lovely fella. Obviously, I'll be honest with you, it's like when you get your first football team as a kid, you know, you usually pick your dad's team. I haven't got a team, but I think I have now.
You're McLaren.
I think I'm a McLaren man now, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I like Lando Norris a lot. He was great.
I totally agree. So do we just sort of do like we've done with other things? Is he now sort of the podcast guy?
Yeah, I think if you listen to this podcast, you now support McLaren. If you haven't got a team, you know, there might be some people out there that are nerds that are all over it, that love it. But for those
question
people...
for you, are we supporting McLaren or Lando Norris? I.e., if Lando Norris moves, what do we do then?
Well... yeah, that's we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
I'm
to the fact that we're seeing McLaren as well. We'll talk about that one later.
Amy's watching. The reason I say it is I just heard he's signed another contract, so he's not going anywhere.
Oh,
anywhere.
Right, well, that's handy.
So we're McLaren and Norris.
Mm. Yeah, well, we are at the moment. Yeah,
great.
Until otherwise.
Okay.
But cool. The moment, for now, we are McLaren and Norris.
Great chat with Lando Norris there. Can we talk about the experience of you driving him around?
Well, number one, I wasn't sure. I was nervous about being able to fit in the car, but really comfortable. And obviously, yeah, I was a little bit nervous driving Lando Norris around. He knows what he's doing. But what a great car to drive around. It felt like it just wanted, it was like a caged animal, just kind of like wanted to go. And so did I. But then I was conscious of having a valuable asset in the car, the car being a pretty valuable asset itself, and a lake right next to me. Mm. All I saw was me pinging off and it going straight in there.
And how did you find the indicators?
It was a safe experience, but it was a fun experience.
Good.
Which is key for me.
It's vital. Okay, so I think the main thing with this is if you're listening to this, you obviously want to see the videos. There's going to be loads of videos on social from the whole day. We got a little tour as well. They've been very kind to us here. We learned all sorts of stuff.
Well, you know what? One of the things for me was like when was seeing Senna's car, Ayrton Senna's car. I don't know. It was just a kind of air of mystery about it, isn't it? Like he's won the championship in that. And then obviously seeing Lewis Hamilton's car that he won the championship in, where he had to finish fifth. And I think Massa won it, didn't it? And it was the shortest kind of world championship win of all time, because Lewis Hamilton then finishes fifth straight after him and wins the world championship.
Look at you flying.
Well, I'm all over it now, aren't I?
What's the deal with Top Gear now?
Well, I was, it's just when you see and you speak to someone like Lando Norris, and like obviously, you know, football's my game. When you speak to him and you hear about the technicalities of it all, and then you see the cars, like it's easy to get kind of caught up in it all and start, you know. So I'm really looking forward to like the next season.
Yeah, or what we do to get involved with McLaren a bit further. I mean, are we saying that we should be going and bothering Lando Norris around the pit lane? He seemed quite receptive to the idea that people do go do that, actually.
Yeah,
but well, do you want to be a pit lane wanker? I don't know.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. I'm not really a pit lane wanker, but I could be. And I'm comfortable with that. But potentially you could listen to Vanessa Carlton on the next race and win. And if he does, then... he's in on the pod.
I think that's what we do. I think everyone listening as well, as a podcast, we all need to remind Lando Norris over social and all that kind of thing to get a bit of Vanessa Carlton on. And imagine he gets a result off that. Imagine he does. Maybe he'll send us a little message or something. You never know.
Well, I hope so. But listen, even though before we go, I just want to do a car 11 that Toby sent in,
because
he knew we were coming down here today. Lorius Carius.
Yeah.
Matty Kashkai. Polo Torre.
Brilliant.
Peugeot Mertesacker.
Yes.
Yeah. Pascal Chim Honda. Centre midfield, we've got Jack Rodwell alongside Steve Sidwheel.
There's always a Steve Sidwell one.
It's always in there, isn't he? Shinji Jaguar, which is a personal favourite of mine. Stylian Petrol.
Yeah.
Obviously, Petrov. Zoltan Gira. Karim Mercedes Benzema. Honourable mention to David Bentley and Juan Sebastian Bugatti Veyron.
Brilliant. Who do we have to thank for that?
That's Toby.
Yeah, well done, Toby.
Good car 11, mate.
Keep sending in your 11s. We love doing these every week. Mm-hmm. And also, what a couple of weeks on the podcast. We've had the Kaiser and Lando Norris.
Yeah, it's been exciting, isn't it? Like, Kaiser obviously has gone down really, like, amazingly well, which I knew he would. Like, obviously huge. I was obviously a huge fan of him, but I want everyone else to be as well.
Yeah.
But those stories, you know, when he talks about Istanbul and he talks about just being at Liverpool, arriving at Liverpool and, you know, playing in a World Cup final and, you know.
Passionate guy.
Even how he celebrated, you know, with the chairman in the shower and, you know, having a ciggy and all that. Like, this is all stuff that's just, it's just amazing to hear someone who's been around, been inside in those massive games.
Yeah, well, we've said this before. Let us know if there's anyone you'd like us to speak to on the podcast or you think would be good to fit into our world. Let us know and we can explore all that. Back stronger next week, I guess, mate.
Hopefully with the Notorious.
With the Notorious, yes.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
This episode is brought to you by a load of pricks.net. We are the experts in selling houses. Chris couldn't sell his house. What did you do, Chris?
I couldn't sell my house for love nor money, Crouchy. 3 different offers I had, all at the last minute, fell through. I turned around to my wife and said, "What can we do to sell this house? Every estate agent is failing us." Then I told her, "Let's go to aloadofpricks.net."
But Chris, what did a load of pricks do for you?
They were brilliant, Crouchy. They sold my house right away. The sign had barely gone up when a well-dressed gentleman came along and offered me twice the asking price.
Chris, would you use a load of pricks again?
I'd use them every time, Crouchy.
Go to aloadofpricks.net. They will sell your house like no other. Load of pricks, load of pricks.net.